This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 152 of the show. It's a special holiday listener mailbag episode. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Ben Badler as always. What's going on, Ben? Congrats on being done with the prospect handbook at the time this goes live, although as we record, maybe a little before. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're cheating a little bit, but no, everything is good. Just gearing up for the holidays where I spend a little time with my family, but also January 15th is coming up. So
we didn't make the schedule design very nice for you. you should get a little bit of a break after the handbook season, but the fact that we've moved the international period to basically immediately after the holidays kind of ruins that for you.
Yeah, but no complaints.
Okay. Well, we do have some fun questions to get into today. I also wanted to, on this episode, maybe talk about the new tech limitations that are coming to the minor leagues. That was some news that broke. We haven't talked about yet on the podcast. JJ has a piece at Baseball America where he talks about 8 takeaways from MLB's new data regulation plan is what it's being framed as. But wanted to at least open that up for a quick convo on this episode, Ben, because I mean, I don't know about you, but I absolutely hate this.
So, I think it sucks. So what is happening? MLB is saying we want teams to invest in technology and drive more innovation. Is that what's happening?
Well, you would hope that's what's happening, but in fact, it's the exact opposite of that.
No more.
The poor owners and the teams who are behind are crying unfairness, and MLB is trying to, I guess, standardize the data capture across minor league baseball and amateur baseball for MLB clubs because we want everyone on the same page in terms of data collection, I guess. So congratulations to all you teams who are on the cutting edge of technology and really wanted to invest in your scouting, your analytical abilities, find a competitive edge. You don't get that anymore. This is baseball. We're not trying to compete. We're just trying to have a level playing field, make sure everyone can get a participation trophy for it. I hate it.
Well, the playing field already is level. You can go and spend as much as you want on whatever technology that you want. If you want to have traject machines at your minor league affiliates, go ahead. If you want to spend money to invest in your own technology, go ahead. If you just want, you know, if you just want what everybody else has, then go ahead and do that. You can spend your money in R&D however you want to, but obviously what MLB is doing here is just cost containment.
They don't, right, 1,000%. JJ's fifth point in this story is it will control costs, and that really could have been the entirety of the story. I feel like all the rule changes we see in baseball are entirely driven about finding ways to control what teams are spending on the amateur market, draft caps on the international market. They desperately want a salary cap. Like, we don't it's horrible. I think it's stupid. If you're not going to invest in technology and you're not going to invest in trying to get better at your processes and you don't want to spend money on either evaluators or the players themselves, you should get left behind. And it literally is just, it's just that. It's spending control. So owners who don't care about fielding a competitive team can stay competitive by default. It's a joke. I hate it.
Yeah, it's this cardinalization to work together and say, hey, guys, you know, to the all 30 owners saying to each other, why are we competing against each other for this? Why don't we just make rules that say we can't, you know, we basically have limits on what we're going to spend and what we can use in terms of the technology that we invest in on the field for players throughout our minor league affiliates. And then if we're not competing against each other, then there's no incentive for us to try to spend more, and we can contain our costs that way. This is the same thing as the quote unquote health reasons why they're trying to shut down, or why they have shut down scouting from whatever is right after Jupiter for high school players, October 15th to January 15th.
October 15th and November 15th. Yep.
Yeah. It's not about, oh, we care so much about player health. This is, hey, we can basically now just like keep all of our scouts, like as owners, we can keep all of our scouts at home. Like there's no competitive disadvantage to doing that. Now we can just say, hey, just everybody has to stay home. We don't have to pay travel costs for all these guys going around the country to see all these players, if just to do like workouts or whatever. I don't even know how you square that with like the type of motion capture biomechanical technology that can be useful to prevent injuries if you have that technology at your minor league affiliates, and you're saying potentially we can't use that now just because we're, you know, the Brewers or the Rays or whoever has invested in that kind of technology, mm-hmm. to, you know, whether it's for performance reasons or for injury prevention detection, that they can't use that when just because other teams don't want to invest in that technology. So I don't think there's really much more than cost. I mean, like, I get that there's some, like, it's cost containment too. We have, all right, if you have one buyer, like if MLB mm-hmm. buys your product or not, mm-hmm. like, okay, you have a lot more pricing power at that point, right. in terms of your negotiating leverage with all of these different companies that you're potentially working with, where you become mm-hmm. a big have or a huge have not, if MLB is not going to have all 30 teams right. willing to pay for it. But it's not, I don't see this as a good thing.
The most ludicrous justification that I've seen for this is that the idea that this is a rule that will save teams from themselves and selling that as a good thing, saying mm-hmm. like, oh, because some teams are so far behind, it's so incredibly hard to catch up now. So, like, if you're that far behind, it's the onus should be on you to modernize and to invest in these areas and to get your processes. Like, why is it MLB's job or every other team's responsibility to pump the brakes on pushing the boundaries for all these things because you have not invested in anything in this area? That doesn't make any sense at all. I have
it's
no idea how.
It's also an area where every team can compete. I mean, if you're the Rays, the Brewers, these are small market right. teams, and so much of their success over the last decade or so has been driven by research, innovation, their use of analytics. Right. They do a lot of other great things too, but that's a big part of it. And it's not prohibitively expensive. The Brewers are not going to go out and sign Bo Bichette to play shortstop for them this year. Like, mm-hmm. okay, like, oh, you can debate whether they should or not, but that's a significant expense for them to have to incur as a smaller market, smaller revenue team.
But I feel like it's
spend more money than other large, or just as much money as larger market teams on research and development or in scouting. Like, who knows? Like, MLB could come and say every team gets 20 scouts or whatever. You know,
don't give them ideas, Ben, because I feel like that literally is the point now. Like, the teams that are far behind, I would not be shocked at all if they were looking around and saying, well, all these rich teams are now getting huge staffs of analysts and people to run all this data and use all this technology. We don't want to have to pay for this large of a staff on that, like, tech and R&D side to keep up with them. We don't want to have to do that. And so if you're using this, like, socialist system to, like, centralize it all and MLB pays for it, you can catch up and not have to ever do anything in order to catch up. It's honestly embarrassing for the sport in my mind. I think there's nothing about this that I think is positive.
Yeah.
Sounds like we're in agreement though.
Yeah.
Can we get to some questions?
Let's get to some questions.
Yay. Okay. We got an email first from Brandon. He says, "Hey, Carlos and Ben, huge fan of the pod. Can't get enough. I appreciate all the insight and time you give to it. My question, does anyone in the 2025 DSL class strike you as someone who could bust out like Eduardo Florentino did this past summer? Daryl Morrell seems like one for me, and not just because he's a Pirate. I'm curious if you two have put into any thought into finding the next Florentino, or if it's just a crapshoot and maybe not worth it. Appreciate you guys."
Yeah. Morrell is a good one because he's somebody just to dream on. I think Florentino is a more advanced hitter at the same stage, but Morrell is like, I mean, ultra long, 6'5". He's like 190 pounds when he signed. He's probably a little heavier than that now, but like was tall, lean, like wide shoulders, plus runner underway. Like you can dream on him having plus or double plus raw power, like solid pro debut. You didn't see the home run power, but I think it's just like a timing thing. Like there's certainly power in there. I think there's going to be more swing and miss with him. Like he's 6'5", longer lean guy. There's going to be some length to his swing that's going to always be there, and some just, I think it's going to be a power over hit type guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he ends up playing, like 6'5", shortstop. Obviously the Pirates have some history, recent history with ultra long and lean shortstops, but he is a good one. I don't know that he'd be like the top guy to bet on. And then I guess it just sort of depends. Like Eduard Florentino is like a solid mid-range bonus guy. So I don't know if you're looking for that. I mean, certainly the very top guys, the very top offensive players in the league, they were a lot of the high bonus guys this year, right? So like Elian Pena with the Mets, got off to a terrible, like horrendous start and still ended up with a really good season overall. Left-handed hitter, good idea of the strike zone, hit ability, power. I don't think he's a shortstop long-term, but I think it's a really good offensive profile at third base. But if you're looking for like an under the radar guy, that's not obviously going to fit like what you're looking for. He signed for $5 million. He's been pretty famous since he was like 13 years old. I think some of the other guys who jump out for me, Kevin Alvarez with the Astros, he's already in their top 10 prospects. So again, maybe, and you know, signed for $2 million, but already making a pretty big name for himself, but 6'4", long, lean, but good hitter. Like he might look at him and think, oh yeah, longer limb guy, he's gonna have some holes, but he's a good hitter, very accurate barrel, has a good sense of the strike zone, more hit over power, but you can certainly see the room on his body where you can see him getting stronger, filling out, having more power coming. Gabriel Davalio with the Angels, if you're looking for a catcher, questions on whether he's going to stick behind the plate. I think he will, kind of in that Francisco Alvarez type mold. He's strong. He's got big power. And like you watch him and you think it's going to be this power over hit guy, but he doesn't swing and miss all that much. So it's a pretty good balance of hitting ability and power. Everybody's going to question the defense. And I think that's fair, but I do think he can stick behind the plate. And then the other guy I would say, who jumps out is Juan Sanchez with the Blue Jays. Huge up arrow for him. He had a strong season in the DSL, like big physical, like 6'3", 215 pounds, signed for just like a tick under $1 million. Power is there for sure. I think there's a question of like what the quality of the at-bats were going to look like this year, and they were actually pretty good. I mean, he hit well in the Dominican Summer League. Really encouraging. We jumped him up already into the Blue Jays top 10 prospects list. So I think those guys are like the best bets, maybe not like under the radar names. But like if you're looking for the guys, and I'm leaving out Josuar Gonzalez, obviously, he's already in our top 100, like kind of a no brainer there, but those are the guys where I think, like, man, like, I could see them jumping into our top 100 at some point.
I'll add one because I rarely get to chime in on the international specific questions, mm-hmm. but there was a name who immediately jumped out to me just because I did the Brave system, and I would have had this player as a breakout candidate, but unfortunately I had to push him too high in the Braves list. He's already in the top 10, so I can't officially label him as that, but he was also a pretty prominent name from this class, signed for $2.5 million. I've got above average tools for him across the board.
Are you going to say the name, or are you going to just
Diego Tornes. It's a great name.
Yeah.
Diego Tornes in the Braves.
I agree.
Yeah, he had a good year in the DSL, and I think his like batted ball data and all of the scout feedback is probably better than the numbers. Like if you're just looking at the stats, like really good feedback on his ability to make adjustments at the plate, good feedback on his athleticism, speed, defense, and he should make his stateside debut next year when he'll just be 17 years old. So if he can continue like showing the sort of impact he showed and then also just start to tap into that for actual, like he didn't hit a single home run, but I don't doubt at all there's lots of impact there. He's another fun one maybe to watch out for.
Yeah, if you're looking for like a deeper cut guy, I'll give you a couple with Luis Arana, who's a shortstop with the Marlins. He signed for $30,000, so I feel safe calling him more of a sleeper type guy, but he had a really good year in the DSL, 297, 419, 476, walked more than he struck out, like smaller guy, like 5'10", but he's like really twitchy and explosive, plus speed, huge arm strength. There's some sneaky power in there. He hit 5 home runs and makes a ton of contact. So he'd be one. And then Hector Ramos with the Red Sox. Like, I don't think he's like, don't expect like Franklin Arias. Like, he's not that good. I mean, I think if you listen to our AL East episode, you know, I like Franklin Arias a lot, but just like a really well-rounded switch hitting shortstop. So, you know, very different profile than Edward Florentino. If you're looking for like the big hit power combo guy, like he's not that kind of guy, or like a Josue DePaula, but somebody who's just like a very well-rounded shortstop, like contacts, solid at shortstop. So a guy who's, you know, under the $1 million range, or two guys under the $1 million range that think have a chance to make some more noise next year.
Okay, cool. We've got another question from Falcons 8572 on Instagram, who says, what comps would you give for California high school shortstop Tyler Spangler? Other publications are saying Cal Ripken Jr. and Corey Seager. So yeah, Tyler Spangler, one of the top prospects in the 2026 class. He's one of the top-ranked high school shortstops we have. Stanford commit. I don't know that I necessarily have a good comp for him now, but I wanted to address this question because I'm so tired of the Corey Seager comp, Ben. For every, it's like every left-handed hitting shortstop that's listed as 6'2" or higher, I think it is probably the single laziest comp that is just regularly thrown out in the industry, and I need it to end. Not every shortstop who's big is Corey Seager, but if you're big and you're left-handed and you play shortstop, you get it. This has happened to Colson Montgomery. This has happened to Marcelo Meyer. This has happened to, I mean, someone probably put it on JoJo Parker. Like, it happens to everyone, and I think it's just not a useful comp at this point. Maybe it never was. And I don't think the Cal Ripken Jr. comp is good either. I'm not going to comp anyone to a Hall of Famer. But what are your thoughts on these comps, or if you have one specifically for Spangler? I also just don't know that, I don't know that comps are necessarily always useful. I think they can often be more misleading than anything. Like, we try and like explain like what a player does well, what he doesn't do well, like the sort of offensive impact, defensive profile, like all of that is more interesting than like slapping another name on. I mean, I think it's sometimes useful to say like the swing reminds you of this, or the way he plays defense reminds you of some player, but like overall comps I feel like are often just really lazy. But I don't know. I guess I understand the appeal.
So I guess I can't give a comp now.
You can give a comp. I know it won't be Cal Ripken Jr. So
the Cal Ripken Jr. one makes me wonder, like, what are, I mean, I like Tyler Spangler. Cal Ripken Jr. is a top, I'll be conservative, top 50 player in the history of baseball. Like, that guy if people just like remember him for the streak as like his greatest accomplishment, obviously that stands out. But I mean, this guy, he's one of the best defensive shortstops of all time.
I wrote in my report that Spengler has the durability and will to play baseball that could challenge Cal Ripken Jr.'s playing streak. So that maybe that's where it came from.
Explain it.
To be clear, I did not write that.
The Seager one, I mean, the Seager one, I understand it. Like, just as like...
Oh, Ben, don't give it any oxygen at all. It is the worst comp we use these days.
Would you, what do you, like a left-handed only hitting Chipper Jones? What do you prefer?
Okay.
Like, there's not a lot of, like, 6 foot three, 6 foot four left-handed hitting shortstops to use.
There kind of are now, though.
Who? What are we...
Every prospect every year who's drafted who's a shortstop and tall. I guess if you're talking about established major leaguers that are like perennial all-stars. Well,
players that people not every know.
Okay. I mean, I hate it. Find a new one.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
I like Tyler Spengler a lot, though. I mean, I think he's got a really smooth, compact, left-handed swing. He's Corey Seager height. I will say that. Like, is that fair to say?
Oh, I'm gonna have to quit the pod.
No, it's a really
he's Corey
nice,
Seager height and handedness. Yeah, that's true.
It's a really nice left-handed swing. He's not like. I think he's athletic. Maybe he's not like the super explosive athlete some people want at shortstop, but I think he can play shortstop, worst case, third base, like smart, high IQ player. I think there's power in there. He didn't hit for a lot of power this summer in a lot of the bigger games, the bigger events, but I certainly think that there's power in there. Like, I'll take that. I think pure hit profile fits for him. So I would take that pure hitter who has that physical upside and will come into some more power or more game power as, just as he gets older and stronger.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go into another question. Devin on Twitter says there are currently six players projected to have plus hit and power grades among the players ranked in your top 10 lists. Does that seem low? If so, any ideas about why that might be from a macro standpoint? I don't know about you, Ben, but I actually don't know if that sounds too low. I feel like it's just rare to have prospects that you feel good enough about putting 60s on both their hit and power. Like those sorts of tools should be rare if we're putting them out too frequently on anyone. we're probably using it a little bit too often. I pulled our tool grades for everyone we have in the book right now, and I'm actually just using not specifically 60 hit and 60 power, but I've essentially just summed the hit power columns, and I'm checking to see who has at least 120 on the hit plus power department. So there are going to be some guys that have like a 50 hit and 70 power, or vice versa, just basically the highest offensive grades in the book. And we have 12 players of all the hitters we ranked and graded that have a combination of hit and power tools that give them 120 in the hit power department. And I think that's a perfectly normal sort of distribution for hit and power tools. We can go through some of those players if you want, but I guess a long way of saying no, that doesn't strike me as being like a less amount than normal or you would expect. How about you?
Yeah, there's probably a good amount of players too who are like 55, where it's like close to that mark, or 60 in one, 55 in another. I think it's part of just like how we standardize our process too, where we compare players across different organizations and across different levels too, where like in theory, there's 120-80 scale. Like 60 raw power means one should mean one thing, whether you're talking about, a 23-year-old in double A or a 17-year-old player you're evaluating in the draft. But I think like you've probably seen or heard in your conversations, and I definitely see it internationally, where, somebody will be talking about, a scout with a team. Oh, this guy has, this guy plus power. It's like, well, I don't know. He's a 15-year-old kid from Venezuela. Like, I know he hits the ball hard for his age, but like, if you put this guy into a double A lineup with those grown men or just like a BP and right. see how he hits the ball compared to those guys who do have plus raw power, like, then tell me if he has plus raw power. So like,
it's also just, I think the conversation about plus raw power versus plus game power, which is the number you see, we're referring to game power. There are tons of hitters who have
sure.
more than plus raw power or plus raw power, but their hit tool is such that we can't justify putting 60 power grades on them, because that means we're projecting them to hit 25 plus home runs a season. You could have 80 grade raw power, but if you just don't make contact enough, you might not get a 60 power grade in the book. And so I think it is important to just make sure we're aware the power grades we're listing are not raw power grades. And it's a rare hitter who's getting the same game power grade as their raw power. That means you basically are able to fully tap into all the power that you have. And those hitters are just rare.
And I think with the hit grade too, that's where, like, I bet if you looked internally at a lot of teams, like draft grades, a lot of their hitter grade, like just as a scout, like when you turn in a guy, like if you like him, you'll probably like have a higher hit grade than maybe
you're rounding up.
Yeah. Or just than you would, like when you're evaluating a high school player relative to other high school players, I think you're more likely to put in a 6 hit or even a 7 hit. And then when we go in our process and we're evaluating that same high school player relative to guys who are in double A, in triple A, it's like, okay, sure. Like, we do have some guys with 60 hit where we feel like really confident on it, but like, how many 70 hits do we give to high school players right out of the draft? Like, I think that's pretty rare, but there's
The one I can remember putting it on, I regret it. So,
I just think there's some element of like confidence and risk baked into that hit grade too, where
right
there are guys we probably have evaluated as like 50 hit maybe right out of the draft, or 55, who will go out and be like, actually maybe that should be like a 60, or will be end up being a 70 hit when they actually get to the major leagues. And that's the hardest one to do, and when like guys are so far away from the big leagues, that's it's hard to like stretch and go out on a limb for certain players, I think.
Yeah, this is the best part about doing both the draft and being involved in the prospect handbook process, because you really get a better understanding of how to contextualize some of those amateur grades. Like the first year we rolled out draft grades, tool grades for draft players, I think I was just generally high across the board, because you feel like you're comparing players within their own peer group, and we're not trying to do that. We want those grades to be a little bit more universal to all prospects, and like ultimately all the grades we're putting down are future grades. Like we're not saying this player who has a 60 hit tool has that today. We're saying we're projecting into the future when he's a major league player. What's the hit tool going to be? What's the power tool going to be? What's the speed going to be? So yeah, just being involved in like high school, international, college, pro guys who've gotten a taste in the majors, does hopefully it kind of refines and contextualizes and allows you to have a better understanding. But it also is like, it still is more art than science ultimately, and projecting the hit tool, as you said, Ben, is incredibly difficult. Okay, yes. Good question. Thanks for that one, Devin. We got one more to hit on today. Sprawl on Twitter asks, what pitcher and hitter not in the top 100 have the highest ceiling? I think this is a fun question. My mind immediately went to, like, honestly, like probably it's just guys who have real injury questions. So from like the teams that I did, I was thinking like, oh, if Daniel Espino comes back and he's healthy, his upside looked pretty good when he was healthy before all his injuries. So guys like that come to mind. Alejandro Rosario on the pitching side, like he has crazy pitch grades and showed great control when he's healthy, but they're just like huge question marks about the health. So those were two I went to immediately. And then I've also filtered some players just based purely on our like average grades to see like which are the players with the biggest collection of tools, maybe who aren't in the top 100 category for us now, or maybe our fringe types. But if you have any names you want to throw out, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. You know, on the pitching side, and I think some of these guys could end up being in our top 100 by the time the preseason list comes out. But I really like Braylon Doty with the Guardians, right-handed pitcher. A lot of success this year in low A, threw a lot of strikes. I like the fastball, breaking ball is a hammer.
I feel like I'm with you. I feel like enough people on our staff like him that I would honestly be more surprised if he wasn't on our top 100 when we update. But as of right now, he's not there. So I'm entirely with you on that one.
Yeah, and probably the same will go for Kendry Churio with the Royals. I mean, 17-year-old pitcher signed out of Venezuela this year. And, I mean, he's always had outstanding control since he was an amateur. The stuff was ticking up before he signed. It got even better after that. Just a great combination of, like, stuff and strikes. Like, him and David Shields. Like, David Shields has great control. I don't know. I think Churio has even better control, and he's even younger and he has better stuff. Like it's a pretty exciting upside with Kendry Churio. So those would be two arms on the position player side. Like two guys just for like pure upside. One would be Joshua Baez with the Cardinals, who again, I also think is he's not in our top 100 now. Like as we've zoomed out and like seen the actual improvements that he's made this year.
Yeah, his tool set is tremendous, and
yeah, he will be a top 100 guy.
Yeah, so he would be probably the first name I went to as well. Again, assuming he's going to be on there, another one of the guys that I, again, this is like purely looking at an upside. I think Henry Bolte's tool set is tremendous, like across the board, power, speed, defensive ability, arm strength. Like the tools have always been loud. So if like you're saying like, oh, 99th percentile outcomes, if he makes some adjustments and actually hits and stops striking out, I think he could be a really impactful player. He's one. Another one is actually Xavier Nyans, who is a 2025 draftee, went to the Astros, has I think some of the best raw power from this past draft class, and just is a very selective approach with some swing and miss tendencies. And we just haven't seen him at all in pro ball to know like what is the degree of the contact questions with him. But if he comes out in pro ball and shows that he can hit and keep the strikeout rate manageable, like he has the sort of power that could drive a lineup one day. So he would be one of the hitters I'd point to.
Yeah, two hitters I would have from this most recent draft. One would be Ethan Conrad, who the Cubs drafted 17th overall out of Wake Forest. I mean, it's kind of that Chase DeLauder look in terms of the physicality, the athleticism, the combination of hit and power, but also the injury risk. I mean, it's not the injury track record that Chase DeLauder has, but, you know, we saw him at Wake Forest early in the season. It looked good then, but he got hurt early. I think if he had played out his whole season, he would have gone higher, but hard to say that. You know, maybe he would have scuffled had he played the whole season and as we got into ACC play. But I like the combination of the hitting ability, the power, like the physicality, the athleticism. So I think he has a chance to be an up arrow guy next season. And so does, and it, he already is, but Dax Kilby with the Yankees, shortstop, who's maybe not like the power and some of like the bigger tools that we're talking about with some of these other players, but a really advanced hitter, makes a ton of contact, a lot of adjustability to his swing. And he is a good athlete too. He just doesn't have like the kind of juice and power that some of these other guys were talking about. But I think the hitting ability and the athleticism at shortstop right now makes for a pretty good starting kit.
I'll throw out one other name from the 2025 draft, also a shortstop from the high school ranks, Josh Hammond. He has a ton of raw power and just natural athleticism background as a two-way player. He was one of the more talented pitchers in the class prior to his spring season. We started focusing on hitting. I think there's a wide range of potential outcomes with the hitting ability, and we didn't get a chance to see him in pro ball after signing. So still, we just need to see him do a lot offensively. But he also has good hands in the field, probably more likely to slide from shortstop to third base ultimately, but he's got a cannon of an arm. If he wound up sticking around a little bit longer than people expect at shortstop, that wouldn't shock me either. But his bat speed and impact potential is really exciting. And he's also just a dog on the baseball field. I love the intensity with which he plays. So that's maybe another one I'd throw out here that is just exciting to me and has some upside potential.
Nice.
Cool. Okay. I think that is going to do it for today's mailbag episode, Ben. If you guys do have questions, want to send them in for a future episode like this, please send them to us. Ben is at Ben Badler on various socials. I'm Carlos A. Collazo. You can email us futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. All the relevant contact information is in the podcast description below. So please send those our way and we'll be happy to answer them. Ben, any final comments before we get out of here?
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care. Have a good one. See you next time.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.